Welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast with me, Sam Harris, your host. I invite fascinating humans from all walks of life to share their wisdom and unpack their mindsets and formulas for growth.
Hello and welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast. Today, I'm really excited to be talking about doing less. I have been doing way too much lately. I have too much stuff, and I would say I'm kind of a bit of a minimalist compared to some of my friends. Like, I've been living nomadically most of my life and throwing away most of my stuff, but it still takes up my time and my energy doing all these different things and trying to look after the crap that I have. And Chris here, who's going to be joining me, has written a brilliant book about minimalism and just the mindsets that you sort of need to adopt to live a lower stress lifestyle, which you can just spend more time enjoying. And it's a really good book, and I'm just excited to talk about mindsets and things. And what's hilarious is that you actually sent me this book a year ago. I managed to lose it in all my stuff, and you had to send me a new one, by which time I eventually managed to find the first one because I had too much stuff. And just nicely making the point that I definitely need to improve on this mindset area. This is the Growth Mindset Podcast, where all mindsets get improved because it's part of your general growth, and you are very welcome on the show.
Sam, thanks so much for having me on, mate. And I'm not immune to the doubling up of stuff. So I was very conscious this might have come up, that I'd sent you two books because the first one got misplaced. And then as soon as the second one got sent out, you found the first one. Mm-hmm. And it happened to me the other day. So I lost my debit card. So I thought, I need to order another one. I ordered another one. And then as soon as I ordered it, I found the original. So I think there is something in the world that there is these unwritten rules that say if you lose something, before you find it, you must have to order the replacement, and then the world will allow you to find the original one.
Yeah. So
I feel your pain, mate.
Definitely. I think there's a similar rule of when you're leaving the house and you think you've forgotten something, you're only going to remember what it is until you're too far away to be able to go back and get it. And then, like, you're halfway on your train journey, and then you'll remember, which I think is a rule that you mentioned in your book about going to work once.
It's a, it was a Lee Evans gag. I remember it was like from the 96 or 97, maybe even a little bit earlier, but I remember going to see him live and him saying that, and I'm like, oh, that is so true. And the rest is history.
Yeah, definitely. So quite a few different things to go into on this episode, but also I want to make it super long. One thing I've really enjoyed was how, like, honest you were. I'd often be reading the book and I'd be like, this guy's a fucking idiot. And I was like, but he's actually written this down, which I'm like so happy that you bothered to, because of a lot of the things I didn't necessarily relate to, and like, wow, he's so dumb. And then some of the things I did, I was like, shit, I must be this dumb as well, which, so it worked really well. How did it feel writing things like that?
Yeah, it was strange. And it was a conscious effort to try and put everything into the book. I didn't really want to put all the positives and make it this nice and shiny thing, because it's not real life, is it? So yeah, there is loads of dumb shit in there that I did, and things that went wrong and mistakes. And I just think that is just a reflection of who we are as people. We're human beings, right? We're flawed. And the book is a kind of representation of a flawed human being kind of discovering less. So it was very, very conscious to leave all the dumb stuff in there, really. Mm. So yeah, and I'm glad it resonated, because when I was reading through it, I was like, this is going to be embarrassing. People are going to look at me and go, what an idiot. But it's been really, really well positively received, because exactly what you said, it just resonates with people and kind of goes, oh yeah, I can relate. So yeah, it was a good move to kind of put all my dirty laundry in the book.
Nice. I've often got like a bit of a rule that I find that if my mum's uncomfortable with me doing something, it's usually a good thing to do. And I know that if I'd written that, my mum would be like, Sam, you know, you could come across better or something. And but then, like, once I do the thing, and then, like, it kind of gets results, mum's always like super happy. But it was sort of, it's on like the right borderline of uncomfortable enough for my mum to like not want to do it, but actually would be useful.
Yeah. That's a great rule of thumb for life. I'm gonna borrow that.
Yeah,
borrow that for next time.
No worries. Well, I mean, it seems like you were doing it anyway. So how did you go about, what were the things that made you realize you needed less, and how did you then go on this journey?
Yeah, it was a weird one, because I was quite content kind of drifting through life, you know, a good solid 6 out of 10, I would say, where you just kind of fall into stuff, don't you? You generally, you fall into a career that probably originally just paid your fast fashion addiction and your nights out and a few beers. And then, you know, you kind of look back 10 years later and you're like, wow, I've been here most of my adult life, and I was in that zone, and I'd been living in the same area that I grew up in, and everything was just very, very familiar and comfortable. And that wasn't necessarily bad. It was okay. And I thought I could do something that was better than okay. And so it was this little stumbling block that I had all of my stuff in my home, and around my home was my work. And I thought, if I can get rid of some of that, maybe that will kind of relinquish some of this comfort that I've built around myself and go off and do uncomfortable things, but more exciting, and go on adventures. So yeah, it was by complete fluke that I stumbled on decluttering, and which then led to ultimately selling virtually everything that I ever owned, and including my home, and walking away from a stable job, and then going on this big adventure, and then kind of understanding what minimalism is like. And similar to you, in doing a little bit of the digital nomad lifestyle of exploring and adventures and things like that. And I was like, wow, I did all this amazing stuff without the things that I had cherished all my life, like the DVD collection and all of my shirts and ripped jeans and accessories. You know, had like 15 sweatbands that I used to wear on nights out, and headbands and skinny ties. Yeah. And so, and you know, I never used to wear it and never used to use any of that stuff. And I let go of that stuff, and I realized that all of the belongings and all of the old stories and even the subscriptions and emails and people that I'd kept around me on social media, it kept me safe. It kept me in this comfortable zone that I was trying to move away from. So letting go of all of that comfort allowed me to go and achieve everything that I've achieved today, including writing a book. And, you know, I failed English, which a lot of people don't know. I failed English A-level.
Oh, wow.
And so
you did try to take it at A-level, though, which is just to like call you out.
And I thought, I like writing stories. So yeah. The natural progression was do English A-level and do it more and do it better.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I failed that. And then that story for like 15 years was like, well, you failed English, therefore you're not good enough to write stories. You're not good enough to write articles. And it turns out that was a load of bollocks, wasn't it? So here we are.
Yeah, nice. I love that. I didn't even try to take English at A-level because it was like easily my worst thing at GCSEs, which you have to do, and couldn't write for shit, couldn't do public speaking. I remember like pretending to have lost my notes so I could just sit down early during like the speech that you have to give at GCSE, because I was just like traumatizing myself there, like having a crisis, and never thought I'd be doing any kind of writing. But now I run a newsletter and a podcast and do public speaking and stand-up comedy and things that try and tell me to that 15 years ago, and I would be like, who are you talking about? Because that is not me.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And that's amazing. So all these things that you've kind of collected, these experiences about doing stand-up and writing newsletters and things like that, exactly the same. So for me, it's like I told myself that that's not who I am because of education or society constraints and all these different bits and pieces. And I had let that dictate and design my life. And I was like, no. I take control now, and I design my life, and I am the architect. So yeah, hence probably why we're connecting today, because we are probably kindred spirits.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there's a really nice similarity and imagery between sort of your emotional baggage and how that holds you back, and like your actual physical baggage, because it very much, again, holds you back from doing things. Because if you try and go traveling with an entire suitcase worth of stuff and like a huge backpack, it's just the worst experience. It's just heavy to carry. You can't go anywhere. You're not free. You're not light to go and do things you want to do. You're stuck in places, and it's not fun. Whereas if you spend any time traveling, every time you go traveling thereafter, you just take less and less stuff. And it's so funny when I go with my friends who haven't traveled much before, and you're like, oh my God, what are you packing? Why is that coming? And like your story about like the amount of different trainers and shoes you had and jeans. And I'm like, yeah, I literally have one pair of shoes, one pair of trousers. I paid three pairs of underwear, wash each one every day. And like, I have nothing with me.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a tiny backpack, and it's great. But that took me
10 years. I went to a stag do a few years ago, and I was the only person who took a suitcase for a weekend away.
Wow.
I think it might have been Budapest. And then everyone's waiting for me at the carousel, waiting for my suitcase to come round. Mate. And they're like, for God's sake, love it. like, can't you just bring a weekend bag? And I was like, no, I need my moisturizer, I need my hair, I will need three different pairs of jeans because I need to have the choice. That was before, not anymore.
Definitely. And I mean, choices is just another thing, isn't it? It just takes up your time again, making those choices, thinking about it. And that is one of the nice things about traveling, is that I just don't have any choices once I get there. It's like, okay, I made my choice of which trousers I'm taking, and then that's it. That's if I need trousers, it's those. Well, 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 we are hot into 2022 and January disappeared so fast. And for anyone that runs a business, it is feeling harder than ever to find and hire qualified people that you need. That's where LinkedIn Jobs comes in. They make it easier to find the people you want to talk to faster and for free. I was beyond happy with the quality of candidates from LinkedIn Jobs and the ease of finding them. And it was something that we were really struggling with before with the other tools. So love supporting LinkedIn. On LinkedIn Jobs, you can create a free job post in minutes to reach your network and beyond. And it's LinkedIn Jobs is the world's largest professional network of over 770 million people. You can focus on candidates with just the right skills and experience and use screening questions to get your role in front of only the most qualified people that you need. LinkedIn Jobs help you find the candidates you want to talk to faster. Did you know that every week nearly 40 million job seekers visit LinkedIn? Post your job for free at linkedin.com/growth. That's linkedin.com/growth, GROWTH, to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. I guess what I struggle with is doing that more with my life around how many different projects to be involved in, because I just do think that I am doing too many things. And in the same way that, like, I've struggled with some stuff around, like, with English and things, because I'm dyslexic and was able to overcome them, I have ADHD, which is one of the reasons why I haven't ever had a job, because if I've struggled to really actually do that much, because I get super demotivated really fast and can't concentrate on it, and sure. I'm super creative and find myself doing other things. And so
yeah,
I keep on starting different things, but then not having the energy to really sort of do them all properly. And then I can annoy the hell out of my business partner because I'm doing like five different things badly and not the one thing he needs me to do. And yeah, have you got any tips around doing less, but with focus, just to save me from my own self?
Yeah, potentially. Yeah, I mean, again, this is all through my own stumbling on issues that I'd faced myself. So I'm not a qualified doctor or anything in the medical profession. So with the ADHD, definitely not prescribing anything around, you know, doing that. But around stories that might support in remaining focused and helping with this whole less is more approach is around what could you gain by having less. And so generally what we tend to do is we think that the term less relates to loss. So if I'm not doing enough, we feel like we're not being fulfilled. But actually what that tends to do is that they tend to be excuses and they tend to be our default response. So it's actually, there was a bit of science recently that came out where people were put into a room with Lego. I used to love Lego. Ironically, I decluttered and sold all of my Lego.
Me too.
Which is what makes it brilliantly, because when I saw this, I was like, this is great. So they did this test around, there was a house that was pre-built, a Lego house. And they put these people into where the house was and said, make it better. Nearly everybody took more Lego and added more pieces to the building. Only very, very few took anything away. And actually part of that was, if you were to add things on, it will cost you. So almost like it will cost you a dollar for every brick you use. People would rather take a loss and add more stuff than remove things. So our default response is to add. And that kind of tells us a little bit as to why we get caught up in busyness, why our homes are generally quite cluttered, why we probably spend more than we should. It's because our brain defaults to addition rather than subtraction. So actually it's easier to add, and you need to be more of a critical thinker to subtract. So in a roundabout way, people who subtract and do less potentially have spent more time thinking about what they could gain by having less. So yeah, University of Virginia, that was where the research was done, and it was so profound that the World Economic Forum have picked it up and shared a video, and they've potentially given us a reason why us as humans might be addicted to busyness, while we might be addicted to consuming And that's then ultimately linked to the damage that we've caused to the climate.
Yeah, 100%. You always feel like you kind of want more. And it's such an absurd thing, as in, like you're saying, as in the amount that you spend on having more stuff, and that you kind of don't feel that you want to sort of have a loss and sort of sell it or something, because you feel like it has more value, even though like the actual real value of it isn't that much anymore once you kind of used it. And you're then bearing the cost of it taking up your headspace, it taking up your like actual personal space, and it's just limiting your availability to do other things. And then something I wrote about this weekend, I interviewed a guy who's really cool, he's really successful, runs some podcasts, TV shows and things, but he's trying to do too much. He has some like really good natural skills at talking and things, but then he takes 3-minute calls with people, and he does like 1 hour of his day is anyone can book a 3-minute call with him. And then he appears on like lots of different shows and things, and his day is like he gets up at like 5:30, calendars booked out for months, and like every single minute of his day is sort of trying to do stuff to like use his gift. But then he showed it to my podcast, the worst energy, super slow, just sort of like was not happy, like had some stuff like blocked next and things, and just like he was so boring. And like, you know when you have people that it's just like you're trying to get things out of them, and it took me to kind of basically personally attack him to his lights to even light up and acknowledge that he was in a podcast and say something interesting. And
wow,
it's like he's just wasting his time. He's got this gift and then he's just trying to spread it everywhere and is like being kind of useless. And like, what are you going to do in a 3-minute conversation with someone? After 2 minutes, he's going to tell you have 60 seconds left. And then after 3 minutes, the phone's going to go dead. Like, am I going to feel good that this man's made time for me if like all he's done is sort of say some standard advice because you can't get to understand me in 3 minutes and then like cut the phone off? Like, I'm going to feel like this guy didn't listen to me. He's not going to remember me. Like, what was the point? He's just wasted his time and he's trying to do too much. Whereas like on the opposite end, you have someone like Derek Sivers who he takes very few interviews, but he basically, you have to send him your list of questions. It has to be questions he hasn't answered before, but a sound like so much fun that he like gets really excited to answer them. And then he'll spend a whole day preparing for the interview. He'll block out time beforehand, block out time afterwards, just to have amazing energy and amazing answers for your interview. And he fucking smashes every single podcast he's ever been on. You listen to a podcast with Derek Sivers and you're like, you want to go and listen to more because he's so freaking cool and has such good ideas.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's done like 10 times less podcast interviews than this other guy. And yet every single one is gold and you want to go listen to all the others, and his message gets spread way better because he does less. And it's like, okay, actually doing less can be really good. And he's a really good guy for focuses, and he talks to people around, I think he's got this like this donkey parable whereby like there's a donkey standing in the middle of a barn, and it's sort of, it's really hungry and really thirsty. On the one side of the barn, it's got like all this hay that's dry, so it needs a drink. On the other hand side of the barn, it's got like the water, but it needs to eat because it's so hungry. And it's quite, keeps on looking left and right and doesn't know what to do, and eventually just dies and falls over in the middle because it hasn't worked out what to do. And he's like, don't be a donkey with your life trying to do everything. You've got 70 years or whatever to be productive. You can spend 10 years being freaking awesome as a musician. You can spend 10 years doing startups. You can spend 10 years doing all these different things that you want to do with your life, but do them properly rather than trying to do everything all at once and just being an idiot. And when you put it like that, you're like, okay, actually, I do have quite a lot of time. It would be good to spend that time doing the things properly as opposed to, you know, all these portfolio careers and trying to do everything all at once these days, which is sort of increasingly seems possible, but then you just do a shit job of things.
What a fantastic couple of examples there. I'm definitely going to use the donkey analogy somewhere else, potentially. So thanks for sharing the love on that one, Sam. Well, thank Sivers for that. But yeah, you're spot on. There is a certain amount of social pressure, especially on millennials, because we believe that this portfolio career is achievable. And then we see Instagram and we see this polished life that we can achieve.
Mm.
But actually, a lot of it is not reality. And, you know, that particular individual that you mentioned around those 3-minute calls, I think is ironic, because I guess the attempt is that I'm trying to squeeze as much in as possible by having less time with people. But what that tends to happen is you tend to spread yourself way, way too thin.
Yeah, definitely.
And your impact becomes less. So my whole kind of approach around less work, more impact is focus more on the 2 or 3 things that you're very, very good at or you're really passionate about. You see less people, similar to what you're saying about Sivers, go on the podcast and every single one of them is is gold because he adds value. And at the moment, that guy who's doing the 3 minutes call is not adding any value to anybody. But actually, he's really, really busy. Waking up at 5:30 in the morning, packed out calendar. So on the face of it, looks really, really busy. Looks really in demand. But actually, the impact could be very, very low. And that becomes the goal. You know, it's moved away from having impact. The goal now is to be busy. Because if you're really busy, you're really important, according to society. Because what is the thing that we say? We go, how have you been? Oh, I'm just stacked. I'm so busy at the moment. That is our default response. So our goal now is to be busy, not to make an impact. And that's the type of example that you get, is that when people are too busy, they don't have an impact. Clearly that person hasn't had an impact on you. And yeah, fascinating example.
Yeah, it's ironic that like this guy is meant to be like a sort of a next level thinker, and he has had an impact on me, but not in the way he was expecting at all.
In a negative
like,
way, yeah.
I've learned from him by what not to do, as opposed to like, wow, this guy said such amazing things on my podcast. It was like, yeah, it is funny.
Isn't it funny though, but similar to when people used to work in the corporate world, that they learned the most from the worst leaders that they had. Like you go and have a really, really horrific experience with an awful leader, and they're the ones that you learn the most from, because, well, I'm not going to be doing that. This is how I felt after receiving this particular type of leadership. It's ironic, isn't it, that sometimes the things that we learn are from the people that are not particularly the best at doing stuff.
Yeah, for sure. And again, like running a startup, it's everyone watches kind of what the advice comes from, like Y Combinator and Lean Startup, and how to sort of really grow a good business. And then you start your first startup, or even your second one, and you make every single mistake that they've already told you not to do, and like they've given you all the right advice. But then when you go and make the mistake, that's when you actually learn it, and you go like, that's what they actually meant by like, get your product out in 1 week. I know I like cut some of the features and things, and it took 4 months, but actually, yeah, I would have had so much more money if I had taken 1 week and just tested that one feature that was really important. And oops, now it's taken 2 years to actually get to a revenue model, and I've run out of money, and could have done that straight away. And you have to sort of go through the bad sides as opposed to just listening to the right things. And it's like, I guess that's kind of why I liked your book, of it wasn't the sort of do X, Y, Z and your life would be perfect. But like, I made this mistake and this mistake and this mistake and this mistake, and this is where it fucking got so annoying that I had to change this thing. And it sort of iteratively goes through the steps of enlightenment to minimalism, as opposed to, hey, minimalism's great, it just solves these problems straight away. Because
exactly. I mean, again, it might just come back to the society that we're in at the moment, is that we want the quick and easy answer. We want the top 10 tips now. And again, I was very, very conscious that I didn't really want to put a load of tips in the book. There's no lists in there of, and maybe there's a few lists of podcasts, but there are no things where I'm going, here are the top 5 things that Chris Lovett recommends that you do. Because ultimately, I think that's your own journey to go and explore. It's almost like they're just sharing a story of the things that I found that added value and are beneficial to me. But that might be different to you. You know, that might be,
definitely.
You might want to take 6 out of 10 things that I did. And, you know, I'm guilty of it as well, Sam. When I'm in a rush, or when I feel really passionate and energized to do something, I want to do it now. I want someone else who's done it before me to show me the way, so I don't have to make those mistakes and I can go ahead and do the thing seamlessly. But as you've just described, the way they done it might not necessarily align with the values that you have.
Or you're in
different contexts or cultures. So finding out your own way of doing things, you then tend to create your own story.
Yeah.
That you can then share with others.
Definitely. And it's just harder to learn from things that are just sort of saying like, hey, do this. I find what's interesting is that a similar concept is, if you take advice and like really take it on board from someone that's kind of been successful once, it really doesn't apply to you. Like you're just saying, it can be different. And it's kind of one analogy I heard is like, it's like someone that's won the lottery telling you what their winning lottery numbers are. It's not going to help you win the lottery. Whereas if it's someone that sort of started like 20 businesses, or like Y Combinator, they've had like thousands of businesses go through, they've seen like every single type of different mistake, their advice is very general, to the point where like it's got every single example where you kind of almost zone out from which is the one that you're actually going to make wrong yourself. But it is actually kind of much more correct. And I did really like that concept of like just how stupid it is to listen to someone that's been successful once, because they actually also have no idea what they're doing. Because my first business worked quite well. And I've since realized that I don't really know how to run a business because it was a total fluke in hindsight. At the time, I was like, God, I'm so good at this business thing. I'm a student and I'm running a business. Like, poor. 10 years later.
What a legend.
So many more failures.
What a legend you are, mate.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's ironic, isn't it? That out of flukes and out of sometimes luck come complete amazing creations that add a lot of value to people.
Yeah, definitely. I was playing pool the other day. I may have taken a small amount of acid and was seeing deeper meanings in things. When I say small, like really small, don't worry. But
were you playing 9-ball or like UK 8-ball, like yellow and red?
Yellow and red, apart from it was stripes and spots, which is just, I still think is a stupid way to arrange your pool balls. But anyway, one of the things that I kind of got struck by was, you know, when you kind of don't know what you're doing, you try and pot something, but you just kind of hit it hard. And then, like, randomly, a different ball hits a different ball, and it goes in, like, a different corner, and you've potted two balls, and you're like, wow, that was a total fluke. It was, like, a bit of a analogy for life of, like, actually, sometimes you just have to take a shot and not really know what's going to happen. And, like, sometimes good things happen. Other times, you pot your own white or the black and stuff. And so, but you just have to keep on taking shots, and that's, it was kind of cool. I was like, yeah, this is definitely an analogy for life. Like, sometimes you just get fluky with the first shot. Sometimes you have to try take seven, but as long as you keep on taking them, something eventually goes in.
Oh, I love that, mate.
Nothing happens.
That's really good. Mm. That's really good. And I'm sure there's other things around the pool table that you can use. You know,
yeah.
You don't
I also I had like three balls all around one pocket, and I couldn't. Like, I tried to pot it, like they all came out. And then my friend was like, "This is why you should do less, Sam, because you're trying to do too many things at once." And I'm like, "Stop it now." So yeah,
that's a great analogy. I love the pool table analogy. Very good. Mm. Big fan.
You're also welcome to use it. I mean, we could probably come up with some. I mean, if you try to like finish straight away by plucking the black, obviously you actually ruin everything. I don't know, maybe there's something in that.
Yeah.
Anyway,
we spoiled a game for everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
Someone else has won. But...
cool. Okay. So, is there anything that you, when you're trying to help someone, recognize how they can take some steps towards reducing the amount of crap in their life? Are there any kind of go-to questions that they should ask themselves and like advice that you give them?
Yeah, so what we tend to see currently from the mainstream kind of simple living community is around decluttering physical items. They tend to be the easiest place to start because they're ours, they're within easy reach, and we can touch and feel them. That tends to be the first step for a lot of people. I like to move that on a little bit and actually talk more about the why first, which again almost links back to the growth mindset. Is why do you want to get rid of stuff? Why do you want to have less? What is it that you can achieve if you had less? So, you know, talking about your example around the businesses, your why is clear. But, you know, for other people, because it's very much a case of I want to take action straight away, the why gets forgotten about. Or it's very, very short term. So sometimes around decluttering, getting rid of books that people have never read or clothes that people are never going to wear, their why might be a case of, I need more space. I need more calm. Maybe I need a bit more money so then I can pay for the increased price of food or energy or petrol or every other fucking thing that seems to be going up in life at the moment. Mm-hmm. So ultimately there is a why before you then start to take action. So I like to kind of spend time with clients first understanding what is it you'd like to achieve? What are your aspirations? What would you be able to get if you had less? And so for me, it was all about adventure. You know, because I couldn't take half that crap with me. Or I couldn't take any of it with me. Like, what am I going to do with a wardrobe? I can't put that in my bag. So for me to get rid of all that, it allowed me to then have more money that I could spend doing things that I really want to be doing. It gave me more calm. So if I had had less clutter in my home, when I was coming home from the office and coming home, it was almost like, oh, this is the nice, calming place to be. I ate better. I slept better. I had better ideas. I was more creative. I could relax. Lovely. People pay money to relax. People pay money to go to spas and relax. But you have that potential inside your home. So yeah, that's where what I tend to speak with clients around is why. And in a kind of professional context, again, people tend to get really, really busy really, really quickly because everybody hijacks your time. Everybody wants a piece of you. Go to this meeting, respond to this email, update this task, write this report, etc. And so again, it's all about creating these boundaries, and by not responding to that email or not going to that meeting, or maybe even going to the meeting for a little bit and then coming out, what does that give you? It gives you time to replenish. Yeah, it gives you time to maybe do some of the other important work that you've said yes to. It gives you more. And what is your more? What is your why? So that's what I tend to do with clients around that and speaking engagements as well. So yeah, that's where I kind of go with that. And then if people want to go ahead and listen and look at the top 10 tips, wonderful, because they're all great. But my first step is always, what's your why?
Yeah, nice. I appreciate that. Something I've also found the last few weeks is that I'm expecting myself to achieve less, I have been achieving more, if that makes sense. Just realizing that I'm trying to do too much, and that if I give myself one big thing to do and say that's the only thing I'm doing, I'll usually get it done. When I have like a bunch of different things, I'll get lost in my email, I'll do some other things, I'll like start on some of them and open too many tabs everywhere and get confused, and I'll work too late into night, I won't get a good night's sleep, I'll be working too hard the next day, and like, but
yeah.
Whereas if I actually sort of say, okay, I definitely have to get one thing done, I also definitely have to stop working at a reasonable time and chill out in the afternoon, like I actually have more energy, I get to bed on time, I have a good sleep, I have way more energy and to work the next day, which means my work is better, I'm a nicer person to be around, I'm like much more funny and things, and it's suddenly like life is much easier, and just seeing like your energy in these things.
And that's the Sam we want. That's the Sam we want to see and we want to hear. You know, we want to hear you at your best. You know, we want to hang around with you at your best. We want to listen to you at your funniest. We don't want to have you at 50%.
Definitely.
I'd feel like I was getting a cheap version of Sam.
Yeah.
Because you've worked too hard.
In a rush.
And, but yeah, even like today, for example, I have put two things on my list today. One of them was to talk to you and have an amazing time doing it, which is exactly what's happening now. And second is to finish my TEDx talk, or finish writing it down. And I've, by the end of this call, I would have been done.
Cool.
Because I was, you know, I turned all other distractions off. So the only thing I had to do this morning is take Daisy for a walk and make sure she's okay.
Mm.
She's been hanging out with me all day, which has been great. Focus purely for a few hours doing this talk.
Yeah.
And then hang out with you.
Nice.
Everything else is a bonus.
Thank you for joining us this week on the Growth Mindset Podcast. Before you head on to another episode, what's your biggest aha moment from today's discussion? You can share with us your insights and join us on Reason FM. Reason FM is a social podcasting app and the best way to discover new podcasts, connect with hosts and other listeners. Also, don't forget to tune into the Wiser Than Yesterday podcast with me and my co-host Nico, and we expose you to a different perspective and dive into the world's most thought-provoking and inspiring books. That's all for this episode, and with that, keep learning and keep growing.